If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn and I'm your host. Today's episode is part two of an amazing interview that I did with Harry Weiser. Harry and I worked together at Cantor Fitzgerald on 9/11. He was severely burned. He was in an elevator that caught fire. He was engulfed by a fireball and his miraculous recovery is unbelievable. His story is unbelievable. If you didn't listen to part one yet, I recommend that you listen to that first before you listen to this one. And without further ado, here's Harry Weiser.
There was a lot of, they didn't make it. And most of my department, most of my closest friends and colleagues did not.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting. Let me ask you a question. So you were in an elevator at 8:46 a.m. Was that your normal time to get to work? Or were you early or were you late?
So I came into Manhattan on Metro North from Westchester. And then I would get a subway. And there were two subways I could get. The Lexington Avenue line, which was faster. Or I could go across town on the shuttle and take the...
The 1, 2, or 3?
I think it was the... No. It was the A or the E, I forget which. And I used to go that way sometimes because I had a friend who worked in the other trade center who would sometimes be on the train with me. And she preferred that because you'd get a seat. It was less crowded. It was a little bit slower. And that morning, even though she wasn't there, I decided to just take it a little bit slower, get a seat, which you never got on the Lexington line. And so I went that way. And so it was probably 2 to 3 minutes later than had I taken the Lexington line. And those 2 to 3 minutes were
saved your
the
life.
Difference between life and death.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Wow. But under normal circumstances, that's about the time that you got in every day. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And the people that were lost in your department, was it again, was it their normal time to get in?
You know, I was a bit of a latecomer. The department officially opened at 8:30. And most people were there by then. And I had the company's blessing to come in 15 minutes later. Wow. Because the alternative was to come in, I think, 40 or 45 minutes earlier because of train schedules.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And all right. So, yes, that was my usual time.
Okay. Please continue. So Karen answered questions that you
Karen
asked didn't
questions
go.
And, you know, I went through a few names. I probably went through a dozen names and then I just stopped. I was emotionally exhausted. And I was in Newark Presbyterian until around Thanksgiving. I don't remember the exact date. I needed to do rehabilitation work there. And when I woke up, I literally could not pick myself up out of bed. I couldn't even sit up in bed on my own. And one of my more powerful memories is the first time I stood up, I had a nurse or physical therapist, I can't remember which, on each side. to help me stand. I had a walker in front of me. And with the walker, I took two steps. And they applauded. I had a little crowd. I still get a little emotional about this. I'm sorry.
Hey, no, that's fine.
And two steps back into bed, completely exhausted. But feeling, you know, I'd made a little progress. It was something. And I remember that night after Karen left, and Karen always stayed late. But after she left, I remember unexpectedly just bursting into tears, thinking, here I am 50 years old, and I'm being applauded for taking two baby steps. I'll share a story that I've shared a few times, but very few times, about the elevator. I still don't know where this came from, but I remember this also very vividly. As I was beating the flames, I remember shouting. And the words I shouted were, "You can't have me, not now." I had a 13-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old at home. And not now.
Wow. Wow. And he didn't take you.
I like to think somebody was listening.
Somebody was listening. Somebody was absolutely listening. All right. I think, you know, that kind of story or situation, I think goes more towards what the mind can think the body can do. And it's like, you know, you had the willpower, so to speak, or the frame of mind where, no, you can't have me yet, and I'm not going to let you take me. All right. And that gave you the strength to do what you needed to do to get out of it. That's what I believe. You're always a fighter, Harry. I know that.
Yeah, well, I the doctor said that.
And I'm not even a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I was incredibly lucky and I know it.
Wow. So let me ask you this. Did you suffer or do you suffer from survivor's guilt? I ask you that because that's what people always ask me.
I ask myself that. You know, I certainly a little bit. I know that, as I said, I was close to some of the people who died. And I wanted to call their wives and husbands. It was months before I could bring myself to do it. Because all I could think of was, they must be asking themselves, why was he spared and not mine? And I didn't think that meanly of them. I thought to myself, how could they not be asking themselves that question? How can they not see me, feel happy for me and Karen and my children, but still ask themselves that question? Because, you know, they suffered such a terrible loss. So it took me a while. And they were, when I finally reached out, they were gracious and kind and happy for us. But it they were still very, very difficult calls for me. I suspect for them also.
For sure. For sure. All right, let me ask you this. How, and I know it did, but how did it change your life besides the obvious, you know, besides the physical? How did this experience change your life, if at all? I mean, are you the same guy that you were on September 10th? Or, you know, or did you change?
You know, I think something like this does one of two possible things. I don't think anybody comes out of this unaffected. I think it either changes you or it deepens who you already are. And I think in my case, it was the second. I mean, I think that I'm not fundamentally different than who I was before. But I think some of the things that I feel more deeply. And on the other hand, you know, there's this, for a while, you're living in an almost an elevated state of gratitude and appreciation for life. That's hard to maintain. I still have moments where I will literally just draw a breath. I will remember the days when I struggled to draw a breath. And I'll feel this enormous sense of gratitude. But those are moments, you know, I breathe constantly. I'm not constantly in a state of that gratitude.
Right. Right. Is there a day that goes by that you don't think about it?
No, there's,
there isn't.
It's just not possible. I mean, yeah. I see myself in the mirror.
Right. Every day.
I experience an ache or a pain or a twinge. I still have some of those. And I remember where it comes from. And not angrily, but I remember.
Right. Right. Wow. Wow. You know, it's just it brings all of us back to that horrible day. You know what most people don't know, but I do? You actually wrote a book about your 9/11 experience, but you never got it published.
Yep.
Okay. Now, the reason I know that is because I actually have a copy of that book. I do. And I'm waiting for the go-ahead from you to try and get it published.
First of all, you probably have a draft because I'm a terrible tinkerer. I can't write anything without playing with it a little bit, but it's probably 95% of what I have. I haven't looked at it in, gosh, I don't know, 17, 18 years.
Wow.
You know, it was a good exercise for me.
I would have to imagine it must have been very therapeutic.
Yeah.
I know when I started speaking, you know, telling my story, and the more I told it, the better I felt. And I know that was very therapeutic. And when a friend of mine convinced me to actually write a book, which was 9 years later, okay. And I didn't know the first thing about writing a book, and I wanted to get a ghostwriter, and they wanted, like, I remember the first ghostwriter I called, wanted $65,000 to write the book. And I was like, no, I don't think so. But ultimately I wrote it myself, and, you know, for better or worse. But that also was very, very therapeutic. You know, I used to come home from work and I just sat myself down at my computer and just start typing away, you know, if all any free hours or free time that I had, I just started typing away. And, it was very therapeutic. Did you ever did you ever go to therapy? And I'm talking about physical therapy. I'm talking about, seeing a psychiatrist or seeing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, first I'm going to give you an unsolicited plug because I have your book also. And if anybody listening doesn't have it, get it. It's a wonderful book. It's a very moving story.
Thank you, Harry.
And the answer is yes. You know, I came out of this and a lot of physical therapy. And my main doctor encouraged me. I was, as I said, I was at the hospital. I went to a rehab center. I had to go back to the hospital. I had a bit of a relapse. Back to the rehab center. It was 5 months before I came home. And I stayed in touch with my doctor at the rehab center. And he encouraged me to see a psychiatrist. He said, you know, I know you don't have nightmares and flashbacks, but you've been through an experience that by any reasonable definition is traumatic. Why don't you just go and see? He recommended someone he knew.
Right.
Why don't you just go and see the psychiatrist? And if you have a session or two and then decide that you don't need to see anybody, at least you're making an informed decision. And sounded reasonable to me. So I did. And I went in with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because
yeah,
and this is a conceit, I think. But I think, you know, I'm fine. I don't need this.
Been there, done that.
And she was excellent. I mean, she did not push me. And we're towards the end of our session, we're talking. And I said to her, you know, I'm here because Dr. Novich thought it was a good idea. I really don't think this is necessary. What do you think? And she said, I'm not going to give you an opinion. She said, I will tell you, it's clear to me that you don't have PTSD.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. Okay, that's good.
That doesn't mean that this can't be helpful. So I just have one question for you. Is there anything that about your experience that you think about that troubles you that you can't share with anybody because you're afraid it will hurt them? And I'd never thought about it in those terms. But as soon as she asked the question, yeah, I mean, there were things that were going through my head that I did not talk to Karen about because Karen had taken on so much during, you know, 5 months as a single mother, yeah. And then she is becoming a caretaker. And there were things that I just said, you know, I don't need to bother her with this. I knew it would bother her if I spoke about it. And I said, yeah. And she said, you don't know me. We're not friends. Other than in this room, I'm a stranger. You can tell me anything without worrying about how it affects anybody else. If you think that would be helpful, I would encourage you to come. And boy, she was so right.
Wow.
I will tell you one of the things that I didn't even know at that time. Karen loves to travel. And I'm not enthusiastic, but I'm fine with it. She had wanted to take a trip about a year and a half after 9/11. I was physically able, and I was so reluctant. And I think had I not been seeing a therapist, it would have been a much longer term, perhaps a permanent term, before she was able to get me on an airplane.
Wow.
That was a couple of months of talking it through. And it wasn't anything I could put into words. All I realized was that every time the subject came up, I got anxious. So, yeah, and the lesson for me, and the lesson I've shared with others, is that in some communities, in some professional and personal communities, seeing a therapist is viewed as a weakness, as there's something wrong with you. And you know, it's seeing a doctor. And you know, if you have a pain, you don't say there's something wrong about me. You say, I have a pain. I want to do what I can to make the pain get better. And that's what this was.
You know, that's so amazing because my wife, Joyce, who you've met, is in the education field. And she's got a master's in special ed, and that's her forte. And, you know, when they take, she works in a yeshiva, a girls' yeshiva. And very often, you know, incoming student or whatever, you know, they test them to see if they're okay and if they need help, et cetera. And, you know, oftentimes they'll say, you know, the child needs to see, you know, a therapist or something like that. And my wife always said, you know, and when the parents, you know, kind of, you know, go like, well, my child, is nothing wrong with my child. My wife would turn to them and said, Rachmana Litzlan, God forbid, all right, if your child had a bad, you know, let's put it that, let's make it even a better one. If your child had pimples, right, would you take it to the dermatologist to get it fixed? Well, sure, of course. Well, this is no different. Your child has an issue, and this is what can help her. Okay, this doctor can help her. So don't shy away from it. Don't. It's not a stigma. And I think today, it's not a stigma. All right. Most of, I know in the Orthodox, the Jewish Orthodox world, even the yeshivas, even the right wing yeshivas, they all have, you know, if a child needs therapy, they're all for it because they know that that's what's going to help the child. And I think it's, you know, it's a major step than what it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. All right. And so you are absolutely right. And, you know, I applaud you for letting my audience know that, you know, if they need help, they should seek help. And there is no shame and there is no stigma.
Yeah.
Harry, man, I love you to death. I really do. I miss you. Okay. I miss our talks.
I miss you too.
That we used to have.
The same.
I just have one last question for you.
Sure.
People that have, that my audience that will be watching this, if they wish to reach out to you, is that something you would do, mind, if they wanted to talk to you? Maybe because they're going through their own situations or they want some advice or whatever. Would you be open to that first? If not, then we call it a day. If you would, then, you know, maybe you have an email address or something where they can get in touch with you to, you know, to form some sort of a tie to you.
Oh, absolutely. If there's any way that I can help somebody who is going through anything similar or anything at all, I'd be happy to be helpful.
Great. And what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
My email, it's Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, dot Weiser, W-A-I-Z, like zebra, yeah, E-R, at gmail.com.
Okay, so that is Harry dot Weiser at Gmail, Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, dot Weiser, W-A-I-Z-E-R, at gmail.com.
That's it.
Wonderful. Okay, Harry, thanks so much for sharing your story. I know it couldn't have been easy, but it was so important I know that, you know, it took a lot of courage and I really appreciate it. And I know my audience really appreciates it. So good luck going forward. Please send my best to your wife.
I will. My best to yours as well. And thank you. It's just, this is a wonderful excuse for getting together with you.
There you go. Thanks, Harry. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shoman. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.